It might be that big, beautiful mural you pass on your way to work, or the bike rack that looks like a sculpture. Public art is all around us in Tampa Bay. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sessingham. When you walk around your community, are you getting a sense of vibrancy and creativity? If so, that may be because you're experiencing public art. WUSF has been taking a closer look at some expressions of public art in our area. We start in the city of St. Petersburg, which is home to a rapidly growing collection of murals. Recently, the city hosted its second annual Shine on St. Petersburg Mural Festival. WUSF's Mark Hayes went to find out who's painting some of those murals and who's paying for them.
In the local mural universe, Angela Delaplane is considered a rock star. At the corner of 1st Avenue South and 21st Street, she's up on a forklift painting the back wall of classic architecture.
It's going to be actually two octopus intertwined with space in the background. It's a real metaphorical, symbolic mural.
She practically glows when she talks about the explosion of public art in St. Petersburg.
I think it's amazing. Hopefully Tampa jumps on the bandwagon here too. St. Pete really embraces the arts, and so I think this was a perfect environment for Shine to get started in.
On a recent Monday morning, St. Petersburg police have closed the busy intersection of Central Avenue and 5th Street so that Cecilia Lueza can paint on the asphalt. A crowd watches, a DJ plays. Her project is cleverly titled Common Ground. The city and the festival recruited Lueza specifically for this project. 2 years ago, Fort Lauderdale commissioned her to paint a section of Las Olas Boulevard in hopes of reducing traffic accidents. While her work can be seen all over the state, she's developed a special fondness for St. Pete.
I don't think there's another city with a mural festival like this one that we have here. It's truly unique.
Standing nearby is Shine On St. Petersburg Festival co-curator Leon Bedore, who paints under the name Tess One. The festival just finished its second year. In the years since the first murals began appearing on city walls, he has seen the mural scene explode.
You know, I think it started just like anything. You kind of you plant a seed. There was maybe one or two murals that created a spark in the city, and it became contagious, which was actually kind of the hope in the beginning was that, okay, if we can let art live in the city, it will become this thing that people start looking at their buildings a little bit differently. They see it as an opportunity to have, you know, it's like a canvas and to bring in other artists. And so that's exactly what we're trying to encourage here, is to let art live, not just inside galleries, but outside of galleries and outside in the streets.
Not all of the new murals are affiliated with the festival. Some are a subtle form of advertising. There are tight restrictions on what can and can't be included, such as text and images of a particular product. John Vitale of the Vitale Brothers is painting a wall at the corner of 7th Avenue North and Dr. Martin Luther King Street.
It's going to be a woman looking down at some black amethyst crystals with a light kind of illuminating her face, and she's looking down at it. It's an original work of art by Jay Michaels. He's the tattoo artist here at this studio, and we're just taking one of his painting concepts and putting it large scale on his building.
Mitzi Gordon is a local artist and the spokeswoman for the Shine Festival. She also manages St. Pete's Bloom Art Center, a building covered in murals, one of which gets a lot of attention. On the southwest corner is a mural of a goofy-looking guy with one red eye and one green eye who greets drivers entering downtown St. Pete on I-375.
That's James Olison's giant. That was painted a little over a year ago, funded in part by a grant from the city of St. Petersburg.
The creation of a mural requires three things: a space, an artist, and money. Mitzi explains where some of that money comes from.
The City of St. Pete has contributed some funding. We have private sponsors that have contributed some funding. The St. Pete Arts Alliance, local nonprofit, serves as a fiscal agent. Sometimes it's a direct business agreement between an artist and a business owner. It comes from anywhere and everywhere it can.
Since a visitor to St. Pete might not have time to see all of its murals, I asked Mitzi to share a couple of her favorites.
There's a piece by a collective called Morning Breath that's on Central Avenue, right near 20th Street. It's yellow, and it has text all over it, call now and buy this, you know, but it's not an advertisement. It's an art piece appropriating that text and adding other imagery to create this overall composition that maybe isn't everybody's cup of tea, but I really like. One of my sort of all-time top five is a piece called Sam. If you're taking 275 North out of downtown St. Petersburg, before you get to the 22nd Avenue exit, on your right-hand side, kind of gazing out over the highway, is this face, this giant face that was painted on the side of some unused industrial equipment. You can see it coming and going on that part of the interstate, and I kind of feel like he's watching over all of us as we come into the city or leave. So I really, really like that one also.
The Shine Festival has put out a map of St. Pete's prominent murals, but it isn't a complete list. Old murals are being painted over and new ones are being created, and it's all happening so fast. Best way to experience the murals of St. Petersburg? Just go there and take a walk around. Mark Hayes, WUSF 89.7 News in St. Petersburg.
From city murals to street sculptures and free art, we're exploring Tampa Bay's public art scene. The idea is that art shouldn't be trapped inside a stuffy museum or a private home somewhere. Some artists are going to some unusual lengths to share their vision. WUSF's Daylena Miller follows two artists as they abandon their creations in Pinellas and Pasco counties.
Artist Laura Albright is walking down Central Avenue, keys jingling by her side, in downtown St. Pete. She's looking to drop a leather necklace with a citrine and metal pendant, on purpose.
You're making art to give to the world in the first place, so if you're just keeping it and then it's not going anywhere, or you just want to make something special, you basically want to put a smile on someone's face that day.
She stops in front of a large, colorful rhino on Central Avenue. There, she stoops to the rhino's feet and places her necklace in a paper bag, hoping someone will find it. Albright posts a picture of the bag to a group on Facebook so art seekers can hunt for it.
Yeah, hint, say, find on Central. Then it has an image of the rhino and then the free art bag at the bottom.
This is her bi-monthly way of giving back to the community through Free Art Friday, a loose collection of artists around Tampa Bay who leave paintings, pottery, handmade jewelry, and other pieces in public spaces for others to find. The whole idea of art abandonment started 4 years ago in Vancouver, British Columbia. It's the brainchild of Michael Deming, who enjoys leaving doodles on napkins in cafes. His Facebook friends enjoyed the photos he posted of his abandoned sketches, so he started a group to share the idea.
People were sort of going crazy over the idea of these images of art being left behind.
Search for hashtags Art Abandonment or Free Art Friday, and you'll travel the globe seeing art that has been dropped off. The idea is that it's posted on social media, and the people who find it can respond and share. Deming says free art bridges gaps between the haves and the have-nots. Not everyone can afford a painting from a gallery or jewelry that takes hours to design and craft.
The artists, you know, they want to make a living. They don't want to give their art away. But on another level, you sort of, as an artist, you feel like, well, it shouldn't just go to rich people.
St. Pete isn't the only place where art is being intentionally dropped. Trina Masano and Andrea Van Scoy run a Free Art Friday group in Pasco County. One recent afternoon, while walking along Main Street in downtown Newport Richey, Van Scoy says her passion is leaving drawings and fabric dolls around the city.
People like to get things. They like to find things. They like to have things. But who's got $200 or $300 to just go out and spend on art?
She explains that people who stumble across the piece have a clue that it's theirs to keep.
What we do is we put a little note that tells them that they have found free art and to take a picture and visit us on the Free Art Friday West Pasco Facebook page.
Van Scoy doesn't know whether her art will be picked up. She usually doesn't hang around to find out. And Michael Deming, the creator of the art abandonment movement, says that's part of the experience for the artist.
So you do have to sort of give this thing up. You have to sort of, you know, just let it go and let it go into the world, and maybe it'll be found, maybe it'll get thrown into the trash. You just never know.
Andrea Van Scoy's walk to her car takes her past the Newport Richey Antique Store, where she left a colorfully stitched fabric bunny. The fabric bag encasing it is still hanging off the back of the bench.
It's still there. Nobody's taking it yet. I figure somebody will get it.
And hopefully, she says, when they do, they'll post a photo and a message on Facebook for her to see. Daylena Miller, WUSF 89.7 News.
We're taking a look at all kinds of public art in our area. We'd like to get your take. You can tweet us at WUSF or find us on Facebook or Instagram at WUSF Public Media. Make sure you use the hashtag WUSF Pub Art. We'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sussingham, and this is Florida Matters. Public art is all around us in the Tampa Bay area. WUSF has recently been taking a closer look at some examples. The phenomenon, of course, is not limited to Sarasota, Tampa, or St. Pete. Heading east to Lakeland, there's an entire organization dedicated to showcasing local artists and bringing art to non-traditional spaces. I recently tagged along with the executive director of Platform Art, which for the last 12 years has sponsored everything from public monuments to community gardens. At the Platform Art Gallery near downtown Lakeland one recent evening, local poets line up for a turn at the microphone. Megan Hash goes first. She's a sophomore at the Harrison School for the Arts in Lakeland.
Hummingbirds are interesting. I always thought so. Tiny little creatures with even tinier wings. Yet one of the fastest creations in nature. They flutter around, savoring the sweet nectar of flowers, then zoom off like green and red lightning bolts to their next snap, taking follow.
Platform Art Director Cynthia Happy says the poets are from various local groups, including high school and college students.
And the people who are in the poetry club, they serve as great advisors and mentors, really, to these younger poets. And it's great fun, the camaraderie and the collaborations, the guidance, really. It's a super relationship.
The younger poets read from their smartphones. The older people, like retired surgeon Wallace Coyner, bring their handwritten pages to the podium. Coyner's poem is a poignant story about one of his former patients.
He was placed in an orphanage at the age of 9. Actually, those were penal institutions at that time. He was often asked, "What are you in for?" "Because I have no home anymore."
The poetry reading takes place in Platform Arts' donated gallery space. The walls are covered with paintings for an upcoming exhibition on Hispanic artists.
The middle gallery here, the main gallery, is Jessica Guevara, and she lives in Winter Haven. She's a Winter Haven artist, and she has really brightly colored, sort of cartoonish, almost graffiti-like artwork. It's really appealing. And then the back gallery has Paola Martinez, and her work is based on The Day of the Dead. So it's a little darker in a way, but it's very interesting and very expressive.
Besides poetry and paintings, Platform Art is commissioning public art projects. Haffey does not stick to rigid ideas of art and creativity. Installations include ceramic murals along a downtown overpass, a community garden on a formerly blighted corner, and even sculptural bike racks. Haffey calls public art an experience, and one that enhances the community.
I think art is all around us. I think we experience it every day, and sometimes you just don't think of it because it's just such an important and big part of our lives.
Speaking of experiences, Platform Art's fundraiser is coming up in December. With its modest budget, Platform Art has one employee and one annual fundraiser per year. And Haffey says it will involve synchronized swimming, painted bodysuits, and a pastry chef making a dress out of icing. Next on our tour of public art in the area, WUSF's Kathy Carter takes us to a place called Whimsyland. It started out as a plain, unassuming little house, but its homeowners have used it as the canvas for their very creative impulses.
30 years ago, a small bungalow on a corner lot in Safety Harbor had very little curb appeal. Today, the house at 1206 3rd Street can literally stop traffic.
A lot of times people drive by here and just slow right down, so nobody's paying attention. You have to be careful crossing the street.
That's Janet White, a member of the Safety Harbor Artists Collective and art tour guide for Whimsyland, a roadside attraction that serves as both a home and a work of art for its owners, Todd Ramquist and Kira Linda, also known as the Whimsy Twins.
Todd and Carolina are actually traveling artists as well, so they like to call themselves gypsies, and everywhere they go, they collect.
And since the duo spend so much time on the road, they rely on White and other artist friends to keep an eye on the property and answer questions from curious visitors. When the artists first bought the house back in the 80s, it was boring and beige. Now it is turquoise and bright pink, accented with smiley faces, butterflies, and rainbows. And the yard is adorned with all kinds of art. There are winding trails of mosaic tile work, cobalt blue bottle trees, and bowling balls. Lots and lots of bowling balls.
So it started one day when Todd and Kira Linda found a bunch of bowling balls at a flea market. And there were 10 free bowling balls per person. So they called all their friends and they said, "Come on down, we have to get all of these bowling balls." And everybody came.
Today there are more than 800 bowling balls painted in bright colors or with bold patterns. Some line the perimeter of the yard. Others circle flower beds. Dozens of them are stacked in a bowling ball pyramid. The point here is that the bowling ball theme is not subtle, and that has put Whimsyland on at least some people's pop culture radar. It has been featured in magazines, travel books, and on national TV shows like HGTV's Extreme Backyards.
Todd and Carolinda have made every possible use of their bowling balls. The landscaping, the lawn, topping off cool columns, and crafting funny characters.
Whimsyland also features a gazebo packed with strands of colorful beads, a disco ball, and hundreds of tchotchkes, and a couple of art cars are parked in the driveway. There's the Y2K bug, a Volkswagen, bedazzled with CDs, chipboards, and keyboard pieces. The Art Surprise is a VW bug completely covered in the Whimsy Twins wire art. It all adds up to something of a local landmark. And unlike a suburban subdivision with homeowners association regulations, White says residents in this Safety Harbor enclave aren't bothered by their neighbor's eclectic style.
Well, it's been here so long that I think if you buy a house nearby, you kind of know what you're in for.
The interior of the main house can be seen just once a year during a big charity fundraiser, but White says visitors can walk the grounds free of charge at any time of the year. Bowling shoes are optional.
It's not meant to be just seen from afar. It's meant to actually be experienced. So we encourage everyone, when you arrive here, just come on up, step up onto the yard, but don't stand still, because if you do, you might get painted.
Let's go bowling, let's go bowling, let's do it now.
I'm Kathy Carter, WUSF 89.7 News.
Kell is a consultant to nonprofits and local governments on public art. She developed and managed the art plan for Sarasota National Cemetery's Patriot Plaza and established St. Petersburg's first Office of Cultural Affairs. She's currently advising the City of St. Petersburg on art selection for the Pier Park Project. She spoke with WUSF's Lisa Peeks about why she thinks tax dollars should support public art and what makes an effective project.
In regards to taxpayer-supported public art, why have it?
It really started with the idea that the reason to have public art is because art should be a part of everyone's life. You should be able to walk out your door and on your way to work have an art experience. You should not have to go to a museum or a gallery. And now a lot of the rationale has to do with economic drivers, community revitalization. When you have art out in your public spaces, you're sending messages to everybody who goes through them about who you are as a community. Are you a community that values creativity, that appreciates art? Are you a community with history? That seems to be the argument that I see for justifying public expenditures.
Is there a certain percentage that is required?
There is a federal program for the GSA administration.
What is GSA?
General Services Administration, the federal agency that builds buildings. And we have an Art and State Buildings program in Florida. So that's a requirement for buildings that are built with state funds. The state law is a 0.5% of the construction cost up to a maximum of $100,000. And then every county or city may or may not have a statute.
About how much of our money pays for art?
The standard that we inherited from the early programs that were founded mostly in the 60s and 70s is 1% of the construction budget.
Art is so subjective, but certainly there are standards and criteria. What makes for effective public art?
Great question, and one that is argued over at length in all of the selection committees that are charged with making those decisions. In my opinion, what makes great public art is an excellent artist who's the right artist for a particular project. It starts with the quality of the artist. Is the artist a good listener? Does the artist like to work with community?
For those who would look at art and say, boy, you know, you could feed a lot of people for that statue's price, how do you respond to that?
Well, if we're talking about government-funded art and taxpayer dollars, those are usually the projects where that comes up. First of all, these projects are coming out of the capital budgets of these government agencies, not the operating budget. So that means that if they didn't spend it on art, they might be spending it on a nicer toilet or a different kind of material on the floors in the lobbies. if the money isn't spent on art, it's still going to go onto the building or onto the site somehow. That's a very frequent point of confusion in terms of understanding municipal and government budgets. That aside, we go back to our values. We go back to what are our public spaces about? Do we want our public spaces to be sterile because they're functional? Or do we want, when our citizens walk into our public spaces, do we want them to feel something positive or inspired about their community, the government agency they're about to interact with? It can really help to make those experiences start off on the right foot.
Can you explain the difference between public art that's supported by government agencies and taxpayer money and public art that's kind of out in the community?
You know, it always starts with the money. When the money comes from government, there's certain responsibilities and certain expectations and certain rules and regulations. And when money comes from private sources, you have a whole different set of expectations and pressure points and ways that you can operate. And yet when you walk past something, you don't know where it came from. You just are experiencing it.
Can you ever tell by looking at something, oh, that was funded by a government thing? Or
Only if you're walking past a piece and you see the label. Government projects will do this. They will usually identify the commissioning agency.
What is the value of having an art experience, maybe on the daily in your neighborhood?
I think that we need to do more research in the field to get more feedback from our audiences to really be able to answer that question. I hope that as you are doing whatever you're doing, whether it's that visit to the library or driving to work, that the art that you encounter gives you a moment of reflection, of just admiration of what happens if you encounter something beautiful or something interesting. And that's what hopefully art does, whether you see it in a museum or a gallery. But when we can have it out in our public spaces, sometimes it can happen at just the right moment when we need that little distraction or separation from our daily travails.
That's it for today's show. WUSF invites you to contribute to our public art series. Grab your phone and send us your thoughts and pictures. Tweet us at WUSF. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at WUSF Public Media. Make sure you use the hashtag WUSF Pub Art. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Robin Sessingham. Thanks for listening.